theory for a few weeks is looking at some of the main questions that are asked about the gospel. And a couple of weeks ago, we looked at how we are. I'm on Jeff. Can you hear me? You can hear me now. I have a Verizon contract. All right. What we're looking at is a couple of weeks ago we looked at how we're saved by grace. And essentially that was my 30-minute overview of the gospel. And what we're doing now in subsequent weeks is we're looking at just some of the main questions or objections that people may pose about the gospel. Last week we looked at the problem of evil and suffering. If a good God exists, how can he allow so much suffering? I'm not going to re-preach that sermon, but feel free to get a CD if you weren't able to hear it. Today what we're going to look at is why do I need Jesus? To give you a forecast of where we're going, next week I want to look at the question, why do I need the church? Really, well, why do I really need this whole organized religion church thing? We're going to answer that question. The week after that, we're going to look at the Bible. Why do I need some ancient book that really isn't that relevant for my life? Try to answer those and see, yes, we need the church. Yes, we need the Bible. But this morning, what I would like to do is ask this question, why do I need Jesus? Why do I need Jesus? I mean, Ryan, honestly, can't I just be a good person? I don't lie, I don't cheat, I don't drink. I mean, I don't do all that bad stuff. I don't do drugs. I'm a pretty good person. I mind my own business, I go to work, you know, I'm a good citizen. Can't I just be a good person? Do I really need Jesus? Do I really need God? Do I really need religion? Can I just be a good person? This is the question I really want us to unravel and try to answer this morning. The way we're going to do this is we're going to go to Matthew 23 and ask this question first. Why did the Pharisees need Jesus? Now, the Pharisees, to give you a brief introduction to them, they were one of, next to the Sadducees, the religious leaders of the first century. First century Judea, at least. I mean, these were people who were religious. These were people who were doing the moral things. They were doing all the good things. And they were upstanding citizens. They weren't doing all the bad things that we would typically associate with, you know, being a bad person. So if there's anybody that would seem like didn't need Jesus, it's the Pharisees. They were upstanding citizens. They were religious. They were devout. But why did these people need Jesus? And I think if we can figure out why those who were religious needed Jesus, it's also going to help us to understand why all people need Jesus. So let's go through this text together. Matthew chapter 23, verse 1. Matthew 23, verse 1. Then Jesus said to the crowds and his disciples, "The scribes and the Pharisees sit on Moses' seat. So do and observe whatever they tell you, but not the works they do. For they preach, but they do not practice. They tie up heavy burdens, hard to bear. They lay on them on people's shoulders, but they themselves are not willing to move them with their finger. They do all their deeds to be seen by others. For they make their phylacteries broad and their fringes long." By the way, those were just garments they wore during prayer time. Those would have been essentially ways of showing their devoutness. So those are big fancy words for garments and clothing that essentially were showing we are so devout because of these long garments that we wear. We are so religious because of what we wear. That's what that verse is referring to. Verse 6. "They love the place of honor at feast and the best seats in the synagogues and greetings in the marketplaces and being called rabbis by others." Before we go into verse 8, let's notice what the Pharisees do. The Pharisees love to be seen by others. They love to be noticed for their devoutness. They are as hypocritical as it comes. They have this high law that they demand everyone else lives by, but they themselves don't live to it. They demand that everyone else be generous, yet they themselves are not generous. They seem like on the outside good religious people, but on the inside they're hollow. Verse 8. "But you are not to be called rabbi, for you have one teacher and you're all brothers. And call no man your father on earth, for you have one father who's in heaven. Neither be called instructors, for you have one instructor, the Christ. The greatest among you shall be your servant. Whoever exalts himself will be humbled. Whoever humbles himself will be exalted."
In verse 8 down through verse 12, Christ really admonishes the Pharisees. And I want us to go through this and see what he tells them. Verse 8, do not be called rabbi, for you have one teacher. Who's the teacher? Christ is the teacher. You're all brothers. Don't be called rabbi. Verse 9, call no man your father on earth, for you have one father who's in heaven. You do not have any religious fathers. Your only father is the Father God who's in heaven. I'm his son. Verse 10. Neither be called instructors, for you have one instructor, that is Christ. Don't exalt yourselves by these names. You want to be called rabbi. You want to be called father. You want to become teacher. You're boasting your own selves up. I am your teacher. I am your instructor, and I am the Son of God. Therefore, verse 12, whoever exalts himself will be humbled. Whoever humbles himself will be exalted. This text provides us a difference between what I'm going to call exalting oneself and being exalted. Let's first of all examine this concept of exalting oneself. He tells them again, verse 12. Let's begin in verse 11. The greatest among you shall be your servant. That's a paradox. It doesn't make any sense. The greatest of you will be a servant. I figured the greatest of us would be the judge. The greatest of us would be ruler. The greatest of us would be king. No, the greatest of you shall be servants, because verse 12, whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and whoever humbles himself will be exalted. So let's examine this first one. Whoever exalts himself will be humbled. What does this look like? Well, I think Christ paints a picture of what this looks like in verse 3 down through verse 8. Here, verse 7. He tells us, verse 3, these are people, but they preach, but they don't really practice what they do. These are people, verse 4, they tie up burdens, but they themselves aren't willing to do it. They're hypocritical. Verse 5, they do everything to be seen by others. They have all these fancy garments just to be seen by others. Verse 6, they love their honor, they love their titles, they love everything just so they can be seen by men. But on the inside, they're hypocrites. That was the central problem of the Pharisees. They were hypocrites. Well, what does it look like today for us to exalt ourselves? Well, you know, we don't live in a culture where we go around with, you know, great prayer garments showing how great we are, where we have these great titles showing how great we are, and, you know, these religious seats of Moses where we show how great we are. Well, how then do we exalt ourselves? Well, let's go into the mind of the Pharisees. The Pharisees were thinking, look at all the great things I do. I am great and I am good because of everything that I do. I pray more devoutly than anybody else. I practice the law more righteously than anyone else. I follow God's law more perfectly than anybody else. And because of what I have done, I am exalted. The main problem with the Pharisees was that they put their righteousness in their own selves rather than trusting it in God. And brethren, whenever then I say, I am good because of what I've done, I'm a good person, how am I exalted whenever I say that, you know, I'm okay because I'm a good person? I don't drink, I don't cuss, I don't lie, don't do drugs, I don't do any of that awful stuff. I go to work, I pay my taxes, I'm a good law-abiding citizen. I speed every once in a while, but I'm a good person. Well, who does that put trust in? Whenever I say I am righteous because of what I've done, I'm exalting myself. I may not be going around in fancy garments of prayer, and I may not be sitting in the seat of Moses, and I may not have all these religious titles, but ultimately I am saying I'm all right because of who I am and what I do. I put trust in my own self. I put trust in my own works. I put trust in my own deeds. Well, brethren, whenever we exalt ourselves, when we try to justify ourselves, what's going to happen? Whoever exalts himself will be humbled. Well, there's another way. Verse 12, whoever humbles himself will be exalted. This is the opposite. This is the utter antithesis. And here the idea is this. It is not that you are exalting yourself, but this is the idea that you are being exalted. Well, how are we exalted? Passive voice here. How are we exalted? Who's doing the exaltation? Well, again, for the first one, when I exalt myself, I'm lifting myself up. I put myself up on a pedestal because of how great I am, because of how good I am, because of all the dandy things that I do. I'm just hunky-dory because of what I do. Well, when I'm exalted, I'm not the one who is exalting myself. Rather, I am lowering myself. I am humbling myself. I'm taking myself down. Because how do we do this? Well, begin in verse 8, we have to become a servant. I'm not the teacher, Christ is the teacher. I'm not the rabbi, Christ is the rabbi. I'm not the instructor, Christ is the instructor. I am not the father, our God is the father. Again, I do not try to exalt myself, but I recognize my low position. I am a child of the King. I am a son of God. I am a child of the Father. And my position and my goodness and my righteousness is not contingent on me puffing my own self up and exalting my own self up, but it is a contingent on lowering myself. And it is only when I lower myself that then Christ is going to exalt me. Because what do these people do? We have to become servants, and we have to be people of humility. So this is not the person who says, I am so great because of all the great things that I do, because of all the charitable donations I give, because of all the great things that I do, I am such a great person. This is the person who says, I am a servant of God, and every good thing that may come from my hands is only because God has blessed me. This is the person who doesn't say, I am so lifted up and I am so exalted because of all the righteous things that I do in my life. But this is the person who says, I am blessed by God to have any of his blessings and to be part of any of his good works. This is the person who does not trust in myself to exalt myself, but I trust in God to exalt myself. The person who exalts him or herself. This is the person who, I am so good because of what I do. When I humble myself, I am exalted because Christ has exalted me. Not because I am so high and mighty, not because I'm up on my pedestal or my high horse, but because Christ has exalted me. Well, I want to take these two concepts and flesh them out in a bit more detail. What is the outcome and the nature of exalting myself? Again, Matthew 23:12, whoever exalts himself will be humbled. Well, practically for us, what does this look like again? And what's the outcome of this going to be? I want us to go to the book of Romans. We're going to spend the rest of our time in the book of Romans and look at a few examples in Romans. So let's go to Romans chapter 3. Romans chapter 3. What does it look like and what is the outcome of us exalting ourselves? Of us lifting ourselves up? Romans chapter 3, let's begin in verse 8. Romans chapter 3, beginning in verse 8. Let's begin in verse 5. If our unrighteousness, Romans 3, verse 5, excuse me. If our own unrighteousness serves to show the righteousness of God, what shall we say? That God is unrighteous to inflict wrath on us? I speak in a human way. By no means. For then, how could God judge the world? For if through my lie, God's truth abounds as a glory, why am I being condemned as a sinner? And why not do evil that good may come, as may some people slanderously charge us with saying? Their condemnation is just. What then? Are we Jews any better off? No, not at all. For we have already been charged that all both Jews and Greeks are under sin. Here's the problem of the Jews. The problem of the Jews in the book of Romans was they were trying to exalt themselves by their own law. They had forgotten about faith. They had no faith at all, but they were trying to exalt themselves by their own deed. If you had asked one of these Jews, why are you righteous? Let me rephrase that. How are you righteous? What is the means of your righteousness? It is not my faith in God, and it is not the working of God. Their answer would have been, because of all the great things of the law that I do. And again, this is the individual who says, I am so great because of all the great things that I do. And brethren, we know people like that, right? I mean, There was one grad student that I had to work with. I say had to, did not choose to, that I had to work with. She was the most intolerable individual I ever had to be around. Because every time we had a meeting, it was all the great things that she had done. It was all the things that she had done, and she was smarter than the rest of us. She was more accomplished than the rest of us. She was, you know, just the highest and highest and mightiest and the highest and mightiest because of all that she'd done. And on a daily basis, she just had to exalt herself. She had to lift herself up. And where did her own goodness come from? It wasn't blessings. It wasn't the blessings and the work of others. It was that awful entitlement mentality that I am so great because I deserve it and because of all the great things that I've done. And brethren, religiously, we have to really ask ourselves, why do I really think that I'm righteous? If I do think I'm righteous, and I do think I am righteous in the sight of God, I do think I am justified in the sight of God, I think I am saved in the sight of God, but why am I justified? Why am I saved? Why am I exalted in the eyes of God? It's not because of all the great things that I've done, and that's the mistake of the Pharisees. It's because of the working of Christ in the cross. What's the outcome of this? The outcome of this is ultimately self-exaltation results in self-destruction. When I try to lift myself up, when I try to exalt myself, when I try to puff myself up, it's going to ultimately lead to my destruction. I'm going to get up on my high horse for so long, and that saddle is finally going to wear out, and I'm finally going to get so sore that I'm going to get bucked off my high horse. That's going to be the end result. If I try to exalt myself, I'm going to be destroyed. Well, this, I think, shows us in so many ways the special nature of the gospel. Why did God come to us? Well, ultimately, Christ came to us since we cannot go to Him. I, by my own self, cannot exalt myself in the eyes of God. I, by my own works, am nothing compared to the works of God. The works of my hand could never in a million lifetimes compare to the workings of the hands of God. Because of that, I can't lift myself up to heaven. I can't build a Tower of Babel and exalt myself up to God. And because the Tower of Babel that I may try to construct is always going to fail, Christ Himself came down to the world. And brethren, this is what makes Christianity unique from every other religion of the world. Christianity is the only religion where man does not find a way to God, but God found a way to man. God recognized we can't get to Him. We cannot exalt ourselves to Him. We, by our own works, cannot take ourselves up to Him. And because of that, God came to us through His Son. Every other religion in the world, man has to find a way to God. Jesus is so unique, and Jesus is so particular, because Jesus is the only one who said, "No, you cannot find a way to me, so I'm going to find a way to you." And through the cross of Jesus Christ, He has then brought humanity to Him. Well, what then does it look like for us to be exalted? What's the outcome of being exalted? Well, again, Matthew 23:12, whoever humbles himself will be exalted. Let's turn to Romans chapter 5. Romans chapter 5, beginning in verse 6. Romans 5, beginning in verse 6. While we were still weak, if I can put it in another word, while we were humbled, at the right time Christ died for the ungodly. For one will scarcely die for a righteous person, though perhaps for a good person one would dare even to die. But God shows His love for us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Since, therefore, we have been justified by His blood, much more shall we be saved by Him from the wrath of God. For if while we were enemies, we were reconciled to God by the death of the Son, much more, now that we are reconciled, shall we be saved by His life. What did Christ do? Christ came and justified us because we could not justify ourselves. Christ came and saved us because I cannot save myself. Christ came and He died for me because my death would have accomplished my destruction. His death accomplishes my life. Why can't I just be a good person? Why can't I just live through life minding my own business, paying my taxes, going to work, not messing up anybody else's life? Why do I need Jesus? Because, brethren, we live in a world where sin is a reality. We live in a world where we, ever since the sin of Adam and Eve, have lived in a fallen world. We have lived in a world where it's fallen, where Satan is the prince of the power of the air, where Satan rules and sin reigns in the lives of so many. And that nasty problem of sin, I can never overcome. That barrier between us and life found in God cannot be overcome through my own self. It can only be overcome through Jesus Christ. No matter how good I am, no matter how great I am, no matter how wondrous my own works are, no matter how amazing my life is, I can never be reconciled to God because of the problem of sin. It is only through the death of Jesus Christ, and it is only through the life found in Him that we can find a way back to God. When I die, where am I going? I am going to die. I don't know when, but the fact of my death is inevitable. Where am I going when I die? Am I going to be exalted in the eyes of God? Am I really going to get to the other side? Oh, Ryan, you were so charitable. You were so nice. You were so sweet. Isn't that right, Rebecca? I mean, you were just so dandy that you're just going to get into heaven just because of how great you are. I'm tickled to pieces. You were just so great. Brethren, if we think that highly of ourselves, if we have exalted ourselves that highly, on the day of judgment, we are going to be humbled. Because we will stand before the great Almighty God and we will see we are just His creation. We are just His lowly creatures that He has created, and there is nothing that I could do by my own accord to get myself to heaven. When I die and I go to the other side, what's God going to say? God is going to say, Ryan, you recognized by your own might, by your own strength, by your own goodness, by your own standard, you could not get back to me. So you humbled yourself and you obeyed the gospel of my Son. You obeyed the gospel found in this word. You humbled yourself even to the point of baptism and taking on the death and the life of Jesus Christ. And you humbled yourself. And for that very reason, I'm going to exalt you for all of eternity. And I'm going to bring you into an eternal bliss. Not because you exalted yourself, but because you humbled yourself. Brethren, that is why I need Jesus. Because what's the outcome of Jesus? My own exaltation results in death and self-destruction, while the exaltation of Christ results in life. Why do I need Jesus? Because I want to live. Because I want to live for an eternity. Because I cannot get to eternity by my own self. I can't even get to goodness in this own life by myself. I need the one who left heaven to bring me back to heaven. We are not going to get to heaven by coming from earth. The only way for us to get to heaven is because God Himself reached down and He brought us up to heaven through the cross of Jesus Christ. Now let me ask these questions then. Why do I need Christ? I would ultimately argue this: only Christ can exalt humanity out of the void. Without Christ, we are in meaninglessness. Without Christ, we are in a void of nothingness. We're in like a black hole. One philosopher I follow has four questions he always asks. And these are the four critical questions that we must ask in any worldview. And brethren, let me ask it this way. I want us to answer it two ways. If Christ exists, how do we answer? If it is only ourselves, how then do we answer? If we're exalted versus we exalt ourselves. Number one, what is my origin? Where am I from? If there is no God, and if there is no Son of God, I am nothing but blunt material force, and I am just nothing but materiality. And every emotion I have, every sense of will that I have, every good thing that I experience is just an illusion for physical complexes. But if there's a Christ, what is my origin? I am from the mind of God. The mind of the Almighty made me. Which one is truly meaningful? Am I going to live a fulfilling life if I think that I'm just a bunch of matter, that when I die, I'm going to decay and go back to ash? Or will my life be filled with meaning when I recognize I am made from the hand of God? Number two, what is my meaning? Why am I here? If there is indeed no God, I'm here for whatever reason I want to be. I'm here for pleasure. I'm here for fun. But ultimately, whenever I die, that's it. I get maybe 80 years. Some of us are luckier. Maybe 100 years to enjoy life. That's it. And I find meaning for just a few years, and that's it. But if there is a God and if His Son came to this earth, what's my meaning? My meaning is to find my Creator. My meaning is to serve my Creator. My meaning is to fear my Creator. My meaning is to love my Creator. Brethren, which truly gives a meaningful life? Number three, what's moral? If there's no God, what is moral is whatever I want it to be. Period, end of discussion. It can be for the greater good, but ultimately whatever I want morality to be, that's what's moral. If there is a God and if His Son is Jesus Christ, what is moral? What He has dictated in His Word. Which can truly provide for us a true meaningful life? And number four, where's my destiny? Where am I going? If there is no God and if there is no Son of God, then when I die, my destiny is dust. But if there is a God and if I have been saved through the blood of His Son, my destiny is eternal bliss and eternal glory. Brethren, why do I need Jesus? Because without Jesus, my origin, my meaning, my morality, and my destiny are all void. They're nothingness. They're meaningless. But with Christ, my origin, my meaning, my morality, and my destiny have full meaning in every way this life can provide. And so, brethren, let me ask this. Are we going to exalt ourselves? Are we going to be exalted? Paul continues a bit later in the Romans, and he tells us from Romans 8:31. Romans 8:31. What then shall we say to these things? If God is for us, who can be against us? He did not spare His own Son, but gave Him up for all of us. How will He not also with Him graciously give us all things? Who shall bring any charge against God's elect? It is God who justifies. Who is to condemn? Christ Jesus is the one who died. More than that, who was raised, who is at the right hand of God, who indeed is interceding for us. If I exalt myself, ultimately I'm going to stand condemned. If I exalt myself, I am going to stand unjustified. If I exalt myself, I am ultimately going to stand dead. But if I humble myself and Jesus Christ exalts me, I will stand in life, I will stand justified, and I will stand exalted in the eyes of God. And so, brethren, let's answer our question. Why do we need Jesus? Perhaps more personally, why do I need Jesus? Well, because we have two options. Number one, my first option is I can try to exalt myself. And ultimately, we must recognize, I cannot exalt myself out of the void of sin and meaninglessness. Without God, without His Son, without Jesus Christ, I can't exalt myself out of meaninglessness. I cannot exalt myself out of the void. I can try to exalt myself all that I want, but at some point, I'm going to fall off that high horse. And when I fall, it's going to lead to my destruction. But the second option is one that's far better. It is only Christ, if we humble ourselves, can exalt us to the life that is found in God. So, brethren, my question, am I exalted or do I exalt myself? Do I humble myself and let Jesus exalt me? Or by my own goodness and my own might, I try to exalt myself thinking that I am so great? One will lead to life, one will lead to death. One will lead to meaning, one will lead to the void. One will lead to eternal life, one will lead to death. Do I need Jesus? I need Jesus more than anything else in this world. I need Jesus more than I need air. I need Jesus more than I need water. I need Jesus more than I need food. Because those things cannot take me to heaven. Those things cannot give me meaning. Those things may sustain my life for a little while. But it is only Jesus who claims, I am the way, the truth, the life. No one comes to the Father but through me. That is the Jesus that I need. Get out your songbooks, please. So why do I need Jesus? I don't think the question so much, hopefully, is why I need Jesus. But I think the question is how much we need Jesus. How much do we need Jesus? Every way, shape, and form. How much do we need Jesus? Far more than he needs us. We need Jesus for meaning, for origin, for morality, for destiny. We need Jesus for salvation. We need Jesus for life. We need Jesus. And brethren, God has given us a way to Jesus. Remember, man could not go to God. No man comes to God but through me. Let's go through that phrase real quick. John 14:6. I am the way, the truth, the life. No man comes to God but through me. There's a rule and there's exception in that verse. The rule is no one comes to God. That's the rule. No one comes to God. We are creatures. How does the creature address the creator? We are children. How do we address the father? We are subjects. How do we go before the king? No one comes to the Father. What's the exception? But through me. The only way to God is because God came down through Jesus Christ. We are going to go up because he came down. We are going to be exalted because he humbled himself. We are going to be lifted up because he lowered himself. And because God came down, God humbled himself, Jesus Christ came and died on that very cross, we can go back to God. But then the question has to be, how do we get to Jesus? There's two verses in the New Testament that tell us how to get to Jesus. Romans 6 and Galatians 3:27. For as many as you as were baptized into Christ have clothed yourselves with Christ. Galatians 3:27. Romans 6 verse 3 down through verse 5. As many of you have put on the death of Christ and been buried with him through baptism. That is how we get into Christ. And I need Jesus. And if I recognize I need Jesus, I need to get into Jesus. I need to find him. I need to go to him. And if anybody needs to come to Jesus this very morning, come forward while we stand and while we sing.